Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about the cleanup plan for waste ponds in Colstrip, state funding to support development in four Montana towns, and an update on the state's ban on the sale of flavored vaping products. It's Wednesday, February 12th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. A Montana agency Monday released a cleanup plan for waste ponds at two of the Colstrip Power Plant's four units. Kayla DeRoche reports.
The Montana Department of Environmental Quality agreed to plant operator Talen's preferred plan for cleaning up contaminated groundwater from leaking coal ash storage ponds at Colstrip Units 3 and 4. Coal ash is the residue from burning coal, and it contains toxins. DEQ project manager Sarah Edinburgh says the plan calls for flushing out contaminants from the ash ponds using injection and capture wells.
Talen does have an existing capture well system out there, so they are actively pumping water to essentially keep the plume from spreading currently. But we want kind of a more active remediation to address the existing groundwater contamination, so that's impacts, you know, from historical seepage.
DEQ took enforcement action against the Colstrip coal-fired power plant for its leaking ash ponds in 2012. Power plant operator Talen Energy faces the task of remediating decades of contamination at all four of its units. Edinburgh says the units 3 and 4 ash ponds, which span more than 400 acres, were found with elevated levels of toxins like lithium, cobalt, manganese, and selenium, with boron and sulfate at especially high concentrations.
I do know high sulfate levels are concerning to some of the ranchers around there. They can cause weight loss in cattle. And there's some other effects on livestock is kind of the big thing with the sulfate.
Edinburgh says Talen will also close some of those ponds and switch to dry stack storage by 2022, which means it'll stop disposing of wet ash in the pond by that time. She says remediation for Units 3 and 4 should cost around $107 million, and while Talen has promised to pay that as the operator, it's actually being split between all the owners based on their percent share of the respective units. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Montana authorities have arrested two of three men who escaped from the Bighorn County Detention Center in Hardin last week. The Billings Police Department said Anthony Castro and Stephen Caplett were booked into jail late Monday and early yesterday. The third man who escaped on Friday has not yet been found. The sheriff's office says the inmates lured a detention officer into a cell, assaulted and bound him before stealing his key. Authorities say the inmates assaulted another officer before escaping through a garage in the booking area. Police say 25-year-old inmate Andrew Parham remains at large. The Montana Department of Commerce announced yesterday that four towns will receive state funding to support development and rehabilitation of affordable rental homes. Rachel Kramer reports.
Since December, the state's new Multifamily Coal Trust Homes Program has been accepting applications from nonprofits, for-profits, and government agencies on a rolling basis for low-interest loans from its $15 million pool of funding. The Department of Commerce announced the first round of approved projects in Belt, Cascade, Livingston, and Taver Tuesday. Department Director Tara Rice says the state's supply of affordable rental units is not keeping up with demand, which makes it harder to retain and attract workers.
Something that is really at the core of a growing economy around the state. It looks a little bit different sometimes from one community to the next, but is an issue in all corners.
In Cascade County, just shy of $2 million will be used to buy and preserve 42 affordable rental homes for seniors and people living with disabilities at Golden Valley Homes in Belt and Quiet Day Manor in Cascade. Over $1 million will go toward relocating a dozen modular homes from the Bakken region to the Livingston Land Trust Cottages location. And in Haver, around $500,000 will be used to buy and preserve 32 affordable rental homes for individuals and families at Highland Manor. Rice says the Multifamily Coal Trust Homes Program is unique because the funds can support the rehabilitation of affordable rental units rather than just new construction.
In some places, and this is often in rural places, maintaining existing housing structure is one of the core housing challenges. So that's a neat thing about this program.
The funding can also be used to buy land for multifamily rentals and land trusts for rental and mobile or manufactured homes. The Multifamily Coal Trust Homes Program is a result of House Bill 16 that was passed during the 2019 legislative session. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
The state of Montana has revoked 85 specialty license plates that have not been chosen or renewed by at least 400 drivers in the previous year. The license plates discontinued in January include some for high school booster clubs, several high schools, animal shelters, nonprofit groups, and Native American tribes. A law passed by the 2019 legislature to limit the number of specialty plates allows people with discontinued plates to keep them until it's time to renew their registration. ABC Fox Montana reports the state motor vehicle division will review plate sales annually. Organizations with discontinued specialty plates can reapply in 4 years. Great Falls police are asking for the public's help in identifying a suspect they say likely placed a bomb threat on a local elementary school early Monday morning. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has more.
Great Falls police say the note found on Whittier Elementary made multiple bomb threats against area schools. District officials and several private schools canceled classes as police cleared buildings throughout the day. Lieutenant Doug Otto with Great Falls Police says officers were able to catch a male suspect on video placing the note on the school.
And, you know, we have two different videos that we looked at. One was at the school. The other one was at another area in the lower downtown area. By looking at that surveillance system, we were able to determine that this person is likely the same individual, very similar build, same style of jacket, all of those features.
Police say the light-skinned male is 5'7 to 5'9 and was wearing a distinct blue hoodie-style jacket with wide white stripes down the arms. Otto says the video from the lower downtown area suggests the suspect frequents the area regularly. Police don't know if the suspect poses a physical threat if approached, but are encouraging members of the public to stay away and call police if they see him. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Some Montana vape and e-cigarette retailers are once again squaring off with the Bullock administration over the state's temporary ban on the sale of flavored vaping products. This time, they disagree on when it ends. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Flavored vape and e-cigarette product sales are currently off limits in Montana, but a vape industry association vows to resume those sales next week.
We got to do what we got to do. We can't let people act like dictators. The law is the law is the law. And if we have to go to court again, we'll go to court again. But we will be selling our products on the February 20th as a law state.
That's Deanna Marshall, who, along with her husband, Ron, owns Freedom Vapes, which has stores in Hamilton, Bozeman, and Belgrade. The Marshalls, along with the vape industry group, sued the Bullock administration last year to stop the 120-day temporary ban going into place. Now, the Marshalls and the state of Montana aren't even a little close to consensus on the effective end date of that emergency rule banning the sale of flavored e-cigarette and vaping products.
It ends on February 20th.
Not so, according to Governor Steve Bullock's chief legal counsel, Rafe Graybill, who says the ban actually ends
April 15, 2020.
That's a 55-day difference of opinion. The disagreement is partially rooted in interpretation of the emergency rules language when it was originally registered with the Montana Secretary of State's office October 8th. Again, Deanna Marshall.
And it was to be going in effect on the 22nd of October.
That didn't happen. Freedom Vapes is part of an industry group that managed only to temporarily block implementation of the emergency rule. After weeks of legal wrangling and waiting, a judge ruled the state's ban would go into effect December 18th. Rafe Graybill says that start date is key.
So if we're following the statute, the 120-day period starts from when the rules could go into effect. I have reviewed the filing of Secretary of State's office, and it says a very similar thing. It says 120 days from the day of enactment. Those rules never went into effect because of Freedom Vapes litigation. They went into effect December 18th when the judge issued the order.
Graybill says the vape retailers who fought to stall and intended to scuttle the flavor ban have only themselves to blame for it dragging into mid-April. He adds the state health department has clearly and frequently communicated with the public and retailers about the ban's beginning and end dates.
I just went down and had lunch at a restaurant next to a Smoker Friendly in Helena. Smoker Friendly, probably the biggest chain in the state, posted prominently on their door. It says, 120 days from December 18th, 2021. So I don't think there is confusion out there on the issue of when the rules end.
Montana Public Radio called vape shops across Montana to informally gauge industry sentiment on the emergency rules end date. No one who answered the phone wanted to comment or accepted our interview requests. Marshall, secretary of the Montana Smoke-Free Association, says all of the group's 18 shop members will start selling flavored vaping products February 20th. Freedom Vapes owners say flavored vape juice sales are crucial to their business and add they've taken a major financial hit since the ban was implemented about 8 weeks ago.
We've lost more than 60% of our revenue. I don't know how long we'll be able to stay in business along with all other vape shops in the state.
Marshall says her company's pivot to sell individual ingredients, including culinary-grade flavoring, enabling customers to make their own flavored vape juice, has helped a little. Still, Marshall says she's had to lay off six of her 12 total employees. Last December, it was widely anticipated the Montana Smoke-Free Association would appeal the state's temporary ban on flavored vape products to the Montana Supreme Court. That challenge never materialized.
We basically just can't afford to take it any further. We don't, you know, we don't have the money. We're not big tobacco. We don't have deep pockets.
Governor Bullock's chief legal counsel, Rafe Graybill, who's running as a Democrat for attorney general, declined comment on the emergency rule's impact on the vape retailer's bottom line. Instead, he reiterates why the administration pursued the temporary ban in the first place.
The kinds and amounts of nicotine doses delivered to young people in our state as a result of these products can have permanent effects on how young people's brains develop. And the governor is totally committed to making sure that, sure, if adults want to use these products who are over 18, there are ways to access it. But for far too many children in our state who have access to flavored vaping products, he's committed to making sure that they have a chance of being tobacco-free.
Montana initiated the ban amid a national outbreak of lung illnesses reported by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The Montana Health Department last week reported another case of vaping-related lung illness. That brought Montana's tally to 8 lung injury cases and 1 vaping-related death. Health Department officials note the Cascade County patient reported vaping marijuana, which they say is consistent with most of the 2,700 lung injury cases reported nationally. Lisa Ridgett is senior epidemiologist at the State Health Department's Chronic Disease Bureau. Ridgett says the state's online complaint system, which allows members of the public to report violations of Montana's temporary ban, had, as of Friday, racked up 21 valid complaints.
We take that information and we send information back to the local county health department, and then they are really the ones who are in charge of following up and enforcing any complaints come in through that system. So the local county health departments would then send somebody out to follow up on that complaint, and then if needed, they would follow up with their county attorney.
Ridgett did not have any follow-up information on what became of those complaints after they were filed. She says it's too soon to know how effectively the ban has achieved the administration's stated goal of keeping flavored vaping products out of the hands of young Montanans.
But right now we are working on increasing our surveillance when it comes to these products, and we hope that we have some by late this spring or early this summer that will highlight and give us some more information on that.
Rafe Graybill, Governor Bullock's chief legal counsel, says the administration is also keeping close tabs on all vaping-related fronts.
We're assessing our options right now in the context of the federal regulatory changes, you know, that moved most of the sales out of convenience stores and to adult shops. Also in the context of this May 2020 court ruling where many of the e-cigarette manufacturers will have to submit their products to FDA review. So there's a lot of moving pieces still, and we're evaluating our options as those deadlines approach.
The Montana Secretary of State's office wasn't immediately available for comment on the flavored vape ban order filed with their office by the Bullock administration. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal Art Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for the worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about the worm is available at ypradio.org.